wanted to start to just thank all of you who have worked for marriage equality in the state of Wisconsin. I've been married for 25 years and more than 25 years, and every year has been a benefit. And in a perfect world, working to bring that benefit to so many people who want it so much would be the definition of family values. Just like every comic book superhero has an origin story, I have my own story for how I became the person who is talking to you here in this Unitarian Universalist service. I started out my life as a mild-mannered Lutheran boy here in Appleton. When I say Lutheran, I mean really Lutheran. Condemned by original sin, saved by faith, not works, worshiping only the Trinity rather than Mary and the saints like those heathen Catholics. Jesus and the Holy Spirit were one with the Father in the Trinity, and the only people going to heaven were those who believed in the Trinity and had faith that Jesus died for their sins. Lutheran enough to know that Unitarian and Universalist were two ways of saying not really Christian. However, in addition to my faith, I had a deep love of stories that took place on other worlds. The more exotic and unrealistic the world was, the better, as far as I was concerned. I loved losing myself in cartoons, comic books, science fiction movies, and fantasy and science fiction novels. So my life had two poles, church and fantasy worlds. I'm not certain I entirely distinguished between the two. Since church sanctuaries tend to have pretty fantastic architecture. And I thought heaven would sort of be a futuristic utopia. The important thing was that I remember that Lutheran doctrine was reality, and the fantasy worlds were just fun. Then I read the Narnia books. Narnia is a fantasy world attached to this world through a magic wardrobe. As well as talking animals and various fantastic creatures, it has its own god, a giant talking lion named Aslan. In one of the books, there is actually a description of Aslan creating Narnia out of primeval nothingness. I found this really shocking at the time. As a good Lutheran boy, at the back of my mind, whatever I read was the idea that behind it all was the biblical creator god, ensuring that order existed instead of chaos. In the Narnia creation story, there was another dimension, attached to this one, in which a talking animal had the power of creation. There was no way this could fit in with my Lutheran beliefs. As far as I could see, Narnia and the Lutheran god could only coexist in two ways. Aslan could be a subsidiary god with power of creation over a separate dimension. However, this would mean there were gods other than the God of the Trinity. The only other option would be that Aslan had power over a dimension which the true God had abandoned to him. I knew that there was a dimension that God had abandoned, and that there was a supernatural being that had power over it. However, that dimension was hell, and the being was the devil. My instinct was to stick with the Trinity, which meant Aslan was the devil and Narnia was hell. This really creeped me out. I had read several Narnia books at this point and had come to feel that they depicted a more idealized heavenly realm. In Narnia, good ultimately triumphed over evil. All beings could coexist in happiness and justice. And the good sense of virtuous children, much like myself, was rewarded with power and honor. Reading the Narnia creation myth felt like C.S. Lewis was jumping out and saying, "This world that you love so much, it's really hell." Once the shock wore off, I started to think Lewis was inviting me to let go of my instinctive clutch of monotheism. Judging from his words and actions, Aslan was wise, kind, and good. In many respects, he did more for his worshipers than God does. Lewis had also introduced the idea that if you worship any god by doing good things, regardless of the form or lack of form you envision, it inevitably counts as worship of the true God. A Although that ran counter to things the Bible said, this universalist message felt true to me. I had read a lot of Greek and Norse mythology when I was younger, and I now started to see that those stories belonged to religions as powerful and meaningful as my own. Norse mythology, Greek mythology, Aslan worship, each was an alternative universe. Learning about these universes was exciting, not only because of the strange things that happened there, but because the strange things reflected other sets of rules for the cosmos, other gods with different values and priorities. It was after my eyes were opened to this more profound aspect of the alternative universes that I read J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. It was wonderful. The different races of hobbits, dwarves, and elves, each with their own languages and histories, were amazing. Tolkien indulged my curiosity by putting all sorts of historical and linguistic details that he couldn't fit into the story into appendices at the end of the last volume. I discovered a little later that The Lord of the Rings could be a lifestyle, not just a reading experience. I fell in with a group of guys who played role-playing games at the YMCA. Gaming never took over from reading for me, but it was exciting having a wider range of friends to share my love of fantasy with. Many of them were older than me and knew about art and activities that resonated with the books I had been reading. It's worth taking a step back here and looking at the role that these alternate universes now had in my life. On the one hand, I was getting a lot more out of the stories themselves. Initially, I took in the details of the alternate universes as just a part of the stories, something that made the stories more interesting than real life. As I got deeper into the stories, I discovered that these alternate worlds had entirely different structures from our own. I learned histories, legends, forms of magic, and rules of science that were consistent within the alternate world. Some worlds even included a different ethical and metaphysical order. The stories might depict values, ideas of good and evil, of proper human relationships that were unique to the alternate world. Despite the differences, I could connect these ethical and metaphysical ideas to my own values. On the other hand, each alternate world became a tool for building a community in the real world. I built relations with other fans where discussions of the metaphysics and ethics of these alternative worlds became commonplace. We developed shared language drawn from the stories. The language gave us a sense of belonging to a community and a way of telling each other what things we valued most. We could define our identities in terms of these stories. We could do it in a direct way by decorating our homes with images from the stories, or dressing up as characters in the stories. Or we could do it in a more reflective way by using these stories as models for our own lives. I want to throw out a simple idea for you to agree or disagree with. These stories about other universes in which fantastic beings carry out grand dramas for our entertainment and moral edification are nothing more or less than myths. And when people gather together to celebrate these stories and the importance these stories have in their lives, they're doing nothing more or less than practicing a religion. We don't normally use myth and religion in this way to discuss people's engagement with fantastic universe stories. But I think we should, because many people today have become just as devout participants in Star Wars religion or Lord of the Rings religion as are the participants in more traditional religions. It may not be as formal as churches are, but it can be just as emotional and inspiring. And if we want the fellowship to be welcoming to all people, whatever their religious background, we should be sure that these religious backgrounds include Star Trek religion and Marvel Comics religion. Fantasy religions may already be a big part of your spiritual life here. If so, count me in. But if you're a worshiper of some fantasy religion and feel like more could be done to help you feel at home here as a worshiper of fantasy religion, let me know. We can start brainstorming about how to make fantasy religion a bigger part of the fellowship and a bigger part of our searches for truth and meaning. By describing my relationship to these other worlds as religion, I don't mean to say that my attraction to these works says anything noble or sophisticated about me. I got interested in them because I like the beauty, the violence, the triumph of good over evil. There was also sex in a form that my immature psyche could manage. In other words, I was finding things that I craved, but either things like beauty and triumph of good that I didn't get enough of in real life, or things like violence and sex that were emotionally overwhelming when I encountered them in real life. Now that I'm older, I've been able to bring more beauty into my life, and I've seen good win out at least a few times. And I like to think I've learned how to manage the feelings of violence and sexuality that permeate my psyche. But I still feel a lot of excitement in the old fantasies. They sometimes take me back to a time when my ideas about virtue and success were a lot simpler. I tend to like my ideas about achievement to be pretty complex, because my life hasn't been filled with simple victories. But when life gets to be too much of a grind, the old fantasies can inspire me to focus on higher goals. A big source of inspiration in my life was learning about the Jedi in Star Wars. The Jedi Knights of Star Wars have miraculous powers because of their mastery of the Force, energy that permeates the whole universe. Mastering the Force requires a Jedi to master his own personality and emotions. The description of the Force fits in well with teachings from Eastern religions and the occult that were current in California back in the 70s when George Lucas made the first film. But I hadn't been exposed to those ideas as a kid, so the Jedi were a whole new way to think about self-improvement. Ultimately, it led me to interest in psychology and meditation. I've also found more sophisticated teachings in my fantasy religions. One that is particularly important to me is the teaching about evil in Star Wars. I've suffered from depression, alcoholism, and drug addiction. In other words, I've spent plenty of time in my life doing harm to myself and to people I care about deeply. Even when I found ways to treat the symptoms of my mental illness, I would still find myself lashing out at myself and others. The religion I grew up in tended to treat the problem as one of disobedience that could be overcome by sufficient trust in God's love. The thing is, this didn't match what it felt like to be cruel. When I was at my worst, it didn't feel like I was breaking a rule. It felt like I was simply acknowledging how things had to be. Often it felt like God's will that I do the harm that I was doing. Christianity didn't account for how powerful and safe it felt to be cruel. In Star Wars, the Jedi talk all the time about how evil feels powerful. From their perspective, the people capable of the greatest evil are those trained to use the Force, but who become attracted to its dark side, its ability to destroy and cause harm. The great Jedi teacher Yoda notes that fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. Recognizing that fear, anger, hate, and suffering make evil appealing has become a very useful observation to me. In my personal experience, such emotional pain becomes a justification for causing further pain. It feels like I've been waiting to use all my knowledge and resources to cause harm, and my emotional pain becomes the perfect justification. Since I hurt so much, I have permission to do as much harm as I can. Star Wars uses the character of Darth Vader to exemplify this teaching. Darth Vader is the perfect image of evil, all dressed in black, covered with armor, his face hidden behind some kind of weird breathing mask. And he backs up his appearance by tormenting his associates, torturing his enemies, and nearly killing his own son. In the prequel trilogy, George Lucas explained how this evil came about. Darth Vader started life as Anakin Skywalker, a young man who was brave, talented, and instinctively in control of the Force. He was given Jedi training and became a war hero renowned throughout the galaxy, marrying a princess whom he had adored since he was a child. In spite of all this achievement, he was filled with resentment and fear. He felt the Jedi Council made use of him without giving him the proper respect. He was left miserable and angry when his mother was kidnapped and killed by desert raiders. He was tormented by dreams of his wife dying in childbirth, a prophecy that came true. He fell into self-pity and desperate attempts to control things in his life. This justified a life of increasing anger and violence. Ultimately, he saw the Jedi as the enemy in his efforts to protect his wife and bring peace to the galaxy, and participated in the massacre that wiped out the Order. After seeing all this personal history, the inner life of the melodramatic villain of the original movies becomes clear. While Darth Vader is capable of the most extreme evil, he thinks of himself as desiring nothing else than a happy family life and peace in the galaxy. As I said, anger has been a huge issue for me, so realizing the emotional life I share with Darth Vader is a gift. His ruthlessness and power is exactly what is so tempting about anger. The promise that as long as I am willing to do whatever it takes, I can get my way. It's not that I don't see the pain I am causing. When I'm attacking myself, I even feel it directly. But once I get really focused on my fears and shame and self-pity, it feels like causing pain is only reasonable. If I want to stop hurting myself and others, I need to deal with the source of it, the negative feelings I use to justify cruelty. I imagine that I could have learned this lesson from a number of teachers, but I happened to get it from Darth Vader. And thanks to my fellow worshippers of Star Wars religion, I've had occasion to work out these ideas in some deep, often very funny conversations. A friend of mine once said, George Lucas has a lot to answer for. If it wasn't for him, I would have cured cancer by now. For all the time diverted from practical concerns, I like to think that my time spent in other worlds has deepened my life in this one.